this is Monitor, sending sounds your way, and I'm Barry Nelson, adding what I hope is the proper amount of decibels. Usually I don't even think about them. I mean, I just open my mouth and speak. But in this half hour, an expert on audibility is going to explain why too many or too few decibels can mean that you can't be heard on the radio. If you think about it enough, you won't be able to talk at all. So we'll play music. Zorba the Greek by the Tijuana Brass.
Job to do, reach for something good to chew. Chewing helps you stand the pace, anytime and any place. So
hi ho, hey hey, chew your little troubles away. Hi ho, hey hey, chew Wrigley's spearmint gum. Work goes faster, smoother too. Life seems brighter when you chew. Hi ho, hey hey, chew Wrigley's spearmint gum. It's good to sink your teeth into Wrigley's Spearmint Gum. That lively flavor freshens your mouth, and the good chewing helps make the job go smoother and faster. Enjoy chewing Wrigley's Spearmint Gum every day, as millions do. Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew your little troubles away. Hi-ho, hey-hey, chew Wrigley's Spearmint Gum.
Radio, by definition, is the transmission and reception of electric impulses or signals by means of electric waves without a connecting wire. In other and simpler words, I'm sending, you're receiving. But sending what? Well, my voice, which is a sound made up of a measurable number of those electrical impulses. And how many of those impulses does a voice send, and how are they counted? Well, I'm going to level with you. I don't know. Sidney N. Barry, president of Carson, New York, a corporation audio-visual specialist, however, explained it all to Monitor reporter Brad Crandall.
Mr. Barry, how do you measure a voice? And, for example, what am I sending right now?
Well, measuring a voice is usually done on an oscilloscope. The The voice sends out a certain number of vibrations, which in radio transmission become electrical impulses. Voices are measured in the terms of cycles per second. And actually, the average person doesn't quite know the terminology until they put it into a frame of reference. And this is what I'd like to do to start out this little interview. Anybody who has a piano can go over to the piano and strike the note called middle A. Now, middle A is 440 cycles per second. Now, if you go down two octaves, that is 16 notes below middle A, that is 56 cycles per second. This is the lowest possible range of electrical impulses that can be received on the average AM set. Go three octaves above middle A, and you come up to 5,000 cycles. And this is the top range of frequency response that the average radio set can receive. This is not the limit of audibility of the human ear, because the human ear can go anywhere from about 25 cycles, for very good hearing, down below, to approximately 13 or 14,000 cycles. Above that, it's dog whistles, which are not able to be heard.
Well, what we're really saying, then, is you have five octaves, approximately. Of voice range.
That's right.
Isn't the ordinary human voice automatically within those five octaves?
The normal human voice is within that, in that particular range. The question is, what is the audibility of that voice when it's translated into the electrical impulses that you mentioned in the opening here of this interview? What is the capacity of the ordinary radio set that you are listening to? And I'm not talking about FM, which carries the full range. What can the average person hear? He hears somewhere between one octave below middle A and two octaves above middle A. The rest of it is either noise or it's dampened sound so that he cannot get the full value of the person who is talking, or the voice of the person who is talking. Now, this is the limits, the basic limits of what we're talking about.
In other words, if someone is listening to us at this moment on a, let's say, a small transistor somewhere, three octaves is roughly the total amount of pitch or audibility that he's likely to get. And anything that you and I say that in pitch falls below that just isn't going to get through.
It's either, well, it will come through to a certain extent, because there are certain things as overtones, which we can talk about in a few moments, and that's a technical aspect. But he won't hear it clearly, and this is what is most important. Does he hear what the announcer or the actor is saying clearly?
Well, now, according to this method of testing, which voices are the most audible?
Well, there are a great number of them. But one of the voices that is probably best known on the air, and to NBC listeners particularly, is Frank McGee, for example, whose voice falls in the range somewhere between about 300, 275 to 300, and goes up to approximately 3,500. His major force is in that range, and therefore he falls within the average range of the average person and the average radio set. And this is what is important for a listener and for a sponsor.
In your article in Sponsor Magazine on this subject, you said that voices under 300 cycles, now that includes most basses, let's face it, that these voices are generally difficult to hear in transmission. What about, let's say, Orson Welles or Lorne Greene?
This is an advantage of overtones. Now, anybody who has a piano, if they would just go over and strike, let's say, middle A again. Strike it normally. Listen to the sound. We'll do it here in the studio. This is middle A. Now, this is the full sound of middle A. Now, if you'll put your foot on the damper, that is the soft pedal of the piano, strike the key with exactly the same force. Listen again. This is what happens to that particular tone. Every tone on the piano or any instrument has what is known as overtones. It is sympathetic vibration with each octave above the note which is actually struck. Now, voices like Orson Welles or Lorne Greene or other people like that who are, and many singers, have this ability in their voice. It is an overtone. Yet because of the kind of voice Orson Welles definitely has and Lorne Greene has, those overtones will bring it into the realm of audibility of the average set.
This would be a quality, then, of resonance.
Right.
In effect.
Exactly the term.
I see. Is there a practical application for this knowledge now that we have it?
Very definitely. And actually, this whole study recently, and the basis for the article, was called to mind by reason of the fact that in driving along on the highway and listening to a program as I'm going along, there are extraneous noises. Now, after all, radio is now transplanted from the home as a normal listening medium, except for those who listen to FM. FM is normally listened to in the quiet of the home. But radio is now on the beaches, in the cars, where it has to compete with other noises. As I was riding along in the car, I found that while I could hear the music perfectly and I could hear certain announcements perfectly, that when the station announcer or other things came in, other types of announcements, possibly even commercial announcements that I might have wanted to hear since I am in the business, I couldn't hear those voices. And I wasn't about to take my hand off the steering wheel and go to reach to turn that up to get the extra volume to find out what that man was saying. And I started wondering why weren't these voices coming through, and then began analyzing it in terms of what my previous experience had been. Now, unfortunately, as a result of that, the title of my article was, Are You Buying Debit Decibels? And it was directed toward the sponsor, who doesn't listen on the type of radio that the average person is listening to. He listens on the studio hi-fi speaker, and he gets the full range of the man's voice. But when he goes out into the field and he listens to it on the transistor radios or on the car radios where he has the competition of outside noises that normally interfere with listening, this is where he has to listen to find out whether his message is getting across. And if it isn't getting across, he's buying debit decibels. He's not getting his money's worth from the announcer that's on the air.
Well, I'll try to gather up my decibels to a pitch that everyone can hear as I thank you for being with us, Mr. Sidney N. Berry. Thank you, sir. This is Brad Crandall for Monitor.
And I'll just add a few overtones here as I remind you you're on the Monitor Beacon. Next, Monitor Sports with Joe Garagiola, brought to you by Chrysler Corporation's Customer Care Program. Here's Joe.
One thing that outranks even Coles and Newcastle is confusion in boxing, and I'll be back to discuss that. Different people like different sports for different reasons. Some are fascinated by the speed or the violence or the finesse of a certain sport. But if you happen to be a fan of confusion, then there's only one game for you, boxing. When you hear people talk about how boxing needs a federal commissioner, remember that his job is going to be about as simple as trying to teach a school of fish to hold a fire drill. The most recent example started off looking simple enough. A week ago Thursday, Madison Square Garden announced that on Monday night, April 25th, middleweight champion Dick Tiger would defend his title against the world's welterweight champion Emil Griffin. The publicity was just beautiful. The two fighters showed up at the press conference and posed for pictures. And then came the quotes. Tiger got right to the heart of the matter by saying, "It's the best money match I could get right now." That's probably accurate, but it's not the kind of quote that sells tickets. So Griffith said, "They all talk about Tiger's strength and that I'm not big enough to fight him. Well, he isn't any stronger than I am. And I can punch and he can be hit. And I mean with a solid punch. It'll be a good show. Don't worry." Now, that's a ticket-selling quote. Next to be heard from was the Garden's director of boxing, Harry Markson. Harry said the house would be scaled to draw nearly $200,000 with a $25 top. Tiger would get 40% of all the revenue, and Griffith would get 20%. Griffith gets the smaller end because, even though he's a champion too, it's Tiger's title they'll be fighting for. Everybody seemed to be happy, except one guy, and that was Joey Archer, who was protesting loudly that he deserved a title fight. Nobody, it seemed, was paying much attention to Archer. Nobody, that is, except Emil Griffith. Griffith finally went to the Garden people and told them that Archer had succeeded in getting under his skin. He had a proposal to make to answer Archer's charge that Joey deserved a title shot more than Griffith. Griffith told the Garden people, "I will fight Joey Archer on March 18th, and the winner can have the fight with Tiger in April. If he licks me, then I'll pass up my shot at the middleweight title." The Garden people recognized that this was a natural. Archer is a local boy who would be a big draw, and besides, who ever heard of a guy risking a shot at a title, especially after he had already signed for the fight? So the word went out. Archer agreed, and the Garden called another press conference, this one on last Tuesday. But when the press walked into Harry Markson's office, the announcement they heard was a classic, even though it was spontaneous. Said Markson, "Gentlemen, You're looking at an embarrassed fight promoter. And although it may not look it, there's egg all over my face. From there, Harry went on to explain what happened. It seems that Archer changed his mind. Everything sounded okay to him when he first heard it, but when he got to thinking about it, he decided that he wanted to fight Dick Tiger. He didn't want to fight somebody to get a chance to fight Dick Tiger. So, April 25th, Emil Griffith and Joey Archer will both be in the garden for a middleweight title fight. The only thing is that one of them is going to have to buy one of those $25 tickets. This is Joe Garagiola for Monitor Sports.
And Joe Garagiola is a regular on Monitor each weekend, and he's heard every weekday on NBC Radio. Now, let's join the crowd.
Say, this company picnic is fun, eh, miss?
Yeah.
You're in the shipping department, right? Like it?
Yeah.
How come you smoke Chesterfield cane?
How come? Well, about 2 months ago, I was down in New Orleans with Millie, and we were sightseeing, and she said, here, have a Chesterfield cane. You can't get this kind of taste anyplace else. And I tried one, and she was right. So when I got home, I told Shirley...
Why do Chesterfield people like the taste of their cigarettes so much? Don't ask.
Nobody's got the taste of a Chesterfield cane.
Number called Flower on the Wall by George Cates and the orchestra. Monitor reaches all America on NBC Radio, and serving the Great Southwest is KTSM, El Paso, Texas. Wherever you're listening, stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Barry Nelson for Monitor.
Be at home with Monitor everywhere on the NBC Radio Network.